Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're going to be taking a look at excerpts from My Life as a Boy.
Okay.
And it's not exactly an autobiography, not in the traditional sense, and it more like snapshots, I guess you could say,
right,
of a life that kind of spanned, you know, some really interesting periods like the 20th century, wartime rationing, the rise of stand-up comedy, even some whispers of government intelligence work. And all of it seen through the eyes of a woman who she really just never played by the rules.
Yeah. It's fascinating how these excerpts blend those personal stories, you know, the anecdotes, yeah, with these big historical events. It's like a tapestry of social commentary, but also this really personal reflection, too. And you can really see how societal expectations, especially for women, changed over time and how she navigated those changes.
She was born just 20 days after Pearl Harbor.
Wow.
Can you imagine?
Talk about starting life in a moment of upheaval.
Right. Like, well, what else is new?
Exactly. It's like that really sets the tone for her whole life. It's like this sense of the world always being in flux. And you can kind of feel how that shaped her perspective.
Especially when you add in her mother's, you know, that uncanny ability to predict accidents. There's that story about them being on a train.
Oh, right.
And her mom just knows something is wrong.
And she insists on pulling the emergency cord, disrupting everyone's journey.
Yeah.
And sure enough, what happens? The train derails further down the line.
Can you imagine being on that train? I'd be like, what is going on?
So do you think her mother's premonitions, were they like real intuition or just some crazy coincidences? I mean, it really makes you think about fate versus free will, doesn't it?
It really does. And, you know, that theme of intuition, that sense of something lying beneath the surface, it keeps coming back throughout all these excerpts. It's not just about, you know, psychic abilities or anything. It's about understanding these societal dynamics, especially when it comes to gender roles. And this is where things get really interesting for me. I mean, she was always constantly navigating these spaces that were, you know, traditionally for men. Take her modeling career, for example. She talks about all that pressure to conform to a very specific ideal of beauty. And of course, the sexism everywhere she turned. I mean, it makes you wonder how much has really changed.
Absolutely. And it's so interesting how she describes this one situation where she's mistaken for a man in a hotel, and the clerk just assumes she's married to her friend, her female friend.
Oh, wow.
That really just shows you how ingrained those assumptions about gender roles were back then.
Instead of just observing these dynamics, though, she pushed back. She wanted to be a comedian. I mean, can you imagine? A woman comedian at a time when, I mean, come on, women were expected to be anything but funny. I'm so struck by her courage. Have you ever felt that kind of pressure to conform, you know, to these societal expectations?
Oh, definitely. I think we all have, to some extent. But these excerpts, they really highlight how bold it was for her to pursue comedy, you know? Especially for a woman back then. It wasn't just about being funny. It was about challenging all these societal norms.
And speaking of challenging norms, there's that story about a joke she told.
Oh, right.
That caused a riot.
Riot.
What's your take on that? Was it the joke itself? Or was there, you know, something else bubbling under the surface in that audience?
Well, from what she describes, it was a seemingly harmless joke, you know, about a husband finding his wife sewing a button on a neighbor's fly.
And then chaos.
Utter chaos. It definitely makes you think, what other tensions were at play in that audience?
I mean, talk about comedic power. She mentions, you know, how a well-developed sense of humor, it seems to be absent in people who inflict suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And she uses the Nazis as an example, which really made me stop and think.
That's such a thought-provoking point. It's like humor, it can almost be a gauge of empathy, like a sign that you recognize the absurdity of cruelty, of violence.
Yeah. And it really makes you appreciate her evolution as a comedian.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how she eventually used that platform to tackle serious issues, especially those affecting women.
Right.
But before we get to that, we have to talk about her experiences in the art world.
Oh, yes.
She dabbled in fashion design. She was sending sketches to her father in New York.
And those sketches were actually incorporated into her grandfather's spring line. So she was designing clothes at such a young age. But then she moved on to these breathing sculptures. She was using surplus electronics.
Wait, breathing sculptures? That sounds incredible. Tell me more.
They were these, they were inflatable forms, basically, that she rigged to move and pulsate.
Right.
She even had an exhibit that caught the attention of, like, pop art giants, Roy Lichtenstein and Claes Oldenburg.
Wait.
It's like she intuitively knew that interactive art, even electronic games, were going to be huge.
Wow. Ahead of her time. And amidst all this creative exploration, you know, she was still really into spirituality, too. Remember those psychic experiences we talked about earlier? It seems like they really fueled this lifelong fascination with past and parallel lives.
And it's interesting how she didn't present those ideas as just beliefs. They were avenues for exploration. She developed this whole technique called PLS scrapbooking.
Okay.
Using prompts and visuals to help people access memories from past or parallel lives.
Interesting. And that really ties back to her fascination with time and history in general. And you see that woven throughout these excerpts. But, you know, beyond the sweep of history, there's also this intimacy of personal relationships. And let me tell you, these excerpts, they don't shy away from the complexities,
right,
of family dynamics,
right,
and romantic entanglements.
From a short-lived Hollywood marriage,
of course,
to friendships with iconic figures like, you know, Gene Roddenberry, Ken Kesey, even musicians like Mama, Cass Elliot, and Dusty Springfield. It's quite a mix.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and how about the story of how she met her partner, Rashad, mistaken for Dusty Springfield in a dimly lit club.
It's a classic meet-cute.
You can't make this stuff up.
But it also speaks to that theme of mistaken identities, you know,
yeah.
And the fluidity of perception, something she plays with throughout the excerpts.
So true. And that brings us to the later years of her life. We see a real shift in her comedy as she becomes more outspoken about social issues.
Yes.
Especially those related to women. It's like all those years of observing, of challenging, of adapting, it all culminated in this powerful voice for change.
And you see her running these comedy workshops, encouraging others, especially women, to find their own comedic voice. She really believed in the power of laughter as a force for healing, not just for individuals, but for society as a whole.
And what's so striking is that she did all this while maintaining this sense of playfulness, this willingness to experiment, to push boundaries. It's like she never stopped being that curious girl who loved to explore and challenge the status quo.
Do you think do we lose some of that as we get older? It really makes you wonder, how do we maintain that spirit, you know, that curiosity, that courage in our own lives? How do we embrace change and find humor even in the face of adversity? I think those excerpts offer some valuable insights. But ultimately, it's up to each of us to discover our own answers.
That's so true. And for you listening, I want you to think about this. What are those untapped areas of your life? The ones that could benefit from a little more creativity and a good dose of laughter.
You know, it's fascinating how her personal experiences, they often mirror these broader societal shifts. Like, take the 1940s, for example. She talks about rationing during World War II. Butter, sugar, even coffee were hard to come by.
Yeah. You get a real sense of just how much everyone had to sacrifice back then. And that resourcefulness, too. Remember that anecdote about her mother cutting a giant piece out of her omelet at that fancy restaurant?
Oh, yeah.
It was, apparently, that was a common thing back then. A way of showing affection, like, here, have some of my food.
A different set of social norms, for sure. A different level of familiarity, I guess you could say.
It might seem strange to us now, but it highlights how, you know, how societal norms around food, around intimacy even, have evolved over time.
Definitely. And even amidst all those sometimes amusing, sometimes frustrating incidents, there's this underlying current of resilience, you know, this determination to make the best of any situation.
Which brings us to another really intriguing part of her life, her time spent, shall we say, undercover.
Right.
She mentions experiences with the U.S. Army draft and even some government intelligence work, both of which she undertook disguised as a man.
This is where those themes of gender identity and societal expectations, they really, really come to the forefront. I mean, remember, this was a time when cross-dressing was not only taboo, it could land you in serious trouble. And yet she felt compelled to navigate these male-dominated spaces, even if it meant risking her own safety, her own freedom.
And it wasn't just about, you know, personal ambition either. She talks about working as a remote viewer.
A remote viewer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Using her psychic abilities to gather intelligence.
Wow. Like something out of a spy novel.
It really is. And she seems to suggest that, you know, her gender transformation, it wasn't just a disguise. It was a way of accessing hidden knowledge, of seeing the world from a different perspective.
Makes you wonder, how much of her life was a performance?
Right.
Was she always playing a role? Or was there some deeper truth she was searching for beneath the surface?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it?
It is, and it's something she leaves us to ponder. But we can definitely say for sure that she was a master of reinvention, always adapting to new situations, finding creative outlets for her experiences.
And one of those outlets was, of course, comedy.
Of course.
We talked about her early influences and the challenges she faced as a woman in that field. But how would you describe her comedic style? And how did it evolve over time?
Well, she mentions a preference for storytelling over one-liners. It's like she wanted to draw the audience into her world to share her unique perspective on life's absurdities.
She definitely had a knack for finding humor in the unexpected. There's that anecdote about attending a Christmas dinner with, wait for it, Adolf Hitler.
Well,
I know, it sounds crazy, but she's clearly using this as a comedic device, right?
Right.
A way of highlighting the absurdity of evil.
Okay, that makes sense.
She even jokes that that Hitler still owes her for the use of those photos in her act.
I mean, you gotta laugh, right?
It's like she's reclaiming history, turning it on its head, finding the humor in the darkest of places. Do you think is this a way of coping with trauma? Or is it something else entirely?
It speaks to her belief in the power of laughter, you know, to challenge authority, to expose hypocrisy. But as she got older, you see her comedy taking on this more reflective tone, especially when she starts focusing on women's issues and social commentary.
Yeah, there's this real sense of urgency in those later excerpts, a desire to speak truth to power, to expose the injustices she witnessed throughout her life.
Absolutely. She didn't shy away from difficult topics. She mentions performing at benefits for children's hospitals, telling jokes about sick kids.
Wow.
She was using humor to create a space for healing, to acknowledge, you know, the pain, the vulnerability of the human experience.
And she wasn't just focused on performing. You know, she was really passionate about helping others find their own voice, their own comedic power through those comedy workshops.
She believed that comedy wasn't just talent. It was a skill, something you could hone, you could develop. And she seemed particularly drawn to working with women, maybe recognizing those unique challenges they faced in a field that was, and let's be honest, still is, often dominated by men.
And speaking of men, there are some fascinating glimpses into her relationships with various male figures throughout these excerpts. We talked about Gene Roddenberry and Ken Kesey, but there's also this encounter with T.E. Lawrence.
Lawrence of Arabia.
The one and only. What are your thoughts on that section?
It's brief, but it's intriguing. She claims to have met him in a past life and even witnessed his death. Whether you take that literally or metaphorically, it speaks to her fascination with history, her belief in the interconnectedness of lives across time and space.
It also highlights another recurring theme, the idea that everything is happening all at once. Now, I know that might sound a little out there, but it's a concept that's been explored by philosophers and physicists for centuries. The idea that time is not linear, but rather a dimension that encompasses all moments simultaneously.
It's a lot to wrap your head around, but it seems like this concept, it was central to her spiritual path, her understanding of reality.
Which makes you wonder, what did she see when she looked back on her own life? What moments stood out? What lessons did she learn?
Unfortunately, these excerpts don't really give us a definitive answer, but they do provide these tantalizing clues. Fragments of a life lived on her own terms, constantly pushing boundaries, challenging expectations.
She was always, always searching for the next adventure, the next creative outlet, the next opportunity to make people laugh and think.
And speaking of creative outlets, we have to touch upon her passion for magic.
Magic.
And not just any magic, stage magic. Disappearing acts, illusions, even daredevilry.
Wow. It's like another layer of performance, another way of playing with perception, challenging what we think we know.
And it's not just about entertaining audiences. She talks about the discipline, the mental agility required to pull off those tricks, the ability to stay calm under pressure and think on your feet.
Those are pretty essential skills for a comedian too, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. It's like all these seemingly disparate parts of her life, they're actually interconnected, informing and enriching each other.
Yeah, I see that.
And it makes you realize that there's so much more to her story than what we've seen in these excerpts. It's like we've only scratched the surface of a truly extraordinary life. It's like she was drawn to these fields that kept women out, you know? Almost like she wanted to prove that gender didn't matter, that
yeah.
you could pursue anything you were passionate about.
And she did prove it. I mean, stage magic back then. Yeah. Come on, that was practically a boys' club.
Hmm.
But she jumped right in, mastering those illusions and even working them into her comedy act.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that choice to blend those two worlds together?
Well, it speaks to her creativity, for sure, and that willingness to break boundaries. And let's not forget her lifelong love of electric trains.
Oh, right.
She was forbidden from having a train set as a child.
You're kidding.
Nope. But that just made her more determined. She talks about spending hours in her classmates' basement building these elaborate train layouts.
Wow. I wonder what she got out of that. Was it just about playing with toys? Or was there something more there?
I think it was about way more than just playing. She was learning about engineering, problem solving, even storytelling through those miniature worlds. It's a great example of how, you know, those childhood passions, they can really shape our interests and even our skills later in life.
I love that. It makes you think, what are we doing today that seems unimportant, but could actually be, you know, setting the stage for some future creative breakthrough?
And speaking of experimentation, there's that great story about her time working in fashion design.
Oh, yes. We talked about those sketches she sent to her father in New York. They were actually used in her grandfather's spring line.
No way.
She was designing clothes for a major fashion house at such a young age.
That's incredible. And it wasn't just about following trends either. She had this vision, you know, the sense of style that you can see even in her later work with art and comedy. Do you see a connection there? A through line in her creative expression across all those different mediums? Definitely. There's this consistent thread of pushing boundaries, of challenging norms, using her creativity to explore her own identity and the world around her. She even talks about experimenting with the different looks, different personas during her modeling career.
It's like she was constantly trying on different identities, exploring the boundaries of self-expression through fashion, through art, and then ultimately through comedy.
Exactly. And she took her craft seriously. She talks about how important it was to never self-censor, to speak your truth, even when it's uncomfortable, even when it's controversial.
Yeah, and she wasn't afraid to call out hypocrisy, especially when it came to gender inequality. There's that really powerful moment where she describes performing a routine about date rape and how it resonated with all the women in the audience. It's like she was giving voice to their experiences, breaking the silence around something that, you know, that was often taboo.
It's a good reminder that humor, it can be this powerful tool for social change, for challenging norms, for exposing injustice. But she also believed in the healing power of laughter, its ability to connect people, to create this sense of shared humanity. That really comes through in these excerpts.
It does. Remember her friendship with the wrestler Max Baer Jr., the one who played Jethro on the Beverly Hillbillies?
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Their fathers were friends. And she tells this tragic story about Max's father accidentally killing an opponent in the ring. It's a stark reminder, you know, of how fragile life is and the unintended consequences of our actions.
It's a heavy story.
It is. But even then, she finds a way to inject some humor, recalling how Max's father tried to lighten the mood by joking about the incident.
It speaks to that need for laughter, even in the darkest of times. It helps us cope with pain, with loss. And ultimately, that brings us back to that recurring theme of resilience, finding strength and even humor in the face of adversity.
Throughout these excerpts, we see her navigating personal setbacks, you know, societal upheavals, even moments of real danger. But she never gives up. She keeps pushing forward, finding new ways to express herself and connect with others. It's pretty inspiring, wouldn't you say?
It really is. It's a reminder that we all have that capacity to overcome challenges and find joy, even in the most unexpected places.
And for you listening, I hope this deep dive has sparked your own curiosity. What are the untold stories in your life? What are those hidden talents and passions just waiting to be discovered? This deep dive has certainly given me a lot to think about. Until next time, keep diving.